All right. Actually, I submitted this talk in English because I wasn't sure like how Chemnitz works. Notice like most of the talks are German. Well, I decided I'll stay with English just in case like some international people show up and want to listen to at least something or so. Exactly. I'm Christoph, and I want to talk about a project I've started like 2 years ago, which then turned like I did some university program based on it, which helped a lot to free time for this. Exactly, and it's at the moment called Frida. There's a last slide that has something about that as well. And the idea is building an interactive disassembler. Before we start, some words about me. I'm a computer science student in Erlangen, and I'm also like a member of the CTF team there called Faust. CTF teams are computers. CTFs are, in this context, are IT security competitions where people try to basically hack each other and try to find exploits in software the other people use and fix their stuff. So I have some interest in like binary reversing and all this stuff from that direction. And I'm also a Debian developer, so as you may guess, I do somewhat care about free software. Yeah. And I mean, playing with CTFs and doing binary reversing, you notice like there's a commercial software out there that is hugely expensive. And you start thinking, well, the basic problem doesn't sound that hard, actually. Well, that's famous last words, of course. And there are like really hard problems into it. I'll cover probably some of that during this talk. So I first want to introduce the general concept of reverse engineering and disassembling a bit before I go into detail about what I've done so far and where we stand. And like present some ideas where I want to go in the next months, years, however long it takes, and however long I have like still fun doing this. So reverse engineering is basically about figuring out how software works. You have something, and for whatever reason, you want to figure out how this works, and of course, this is what I'm talking now about is not the solution you want to do for free software, because for free software you have source code, and source code is so much better than like staring at disassembly. But you may come across these tools when developing free software, because like you have some program and this produces some file you want to read maybe, and you want to figure out what exactly is in this file format and how does this work and what do I need to do to build a compatible product. And it's of course also very interesting to look at what the bad guys do and look at like malware, viruses, trojans, all this kind of stuff. So this is basically why people do these things. Next, especially in the last category, of course, there's a lot of money to be made, and buying a commercial product maybe not that much of a problem. For FOSS development, maybe yes. So if you want to figure out how a program works, there are basically two workflows. You can basically run the program, watch it do its stuff, read files, call functions, whatever, and observe the behavior. This has, of course, some problems. I mean, it's fine for like figuring out file formats and stuff. If you are having some malware sample, you may not want to actually run it on your computer. So this should be used with care. And there's the static thing, which is basically looking at the code, or if you don't have code, at the assembly. And this is where the fun starts. I don't know how many of you have like looked at object dump output before. And yes, for small things that might work, for larger things it is just plainly doesn't work. So we need smarter tools. And while the idea is assembling is just a transformation between like the textual representation of an instruction sequence and the binary that the computer can run. But there are of course a bit more to it. Before, in the assembly code, you may have some annotations, names, things like that. The computer doesn't use that, so it gets away. And there can happen all kinds of funny stuff. I have an example here. I don't know if you can read assembly. So this starts with some code at the beginning. And then in between, there becomes some data, some string. And then we continue with instructions. The program actually runs, and from here it goes directly down here. So everything's fine. But it's of course, if you have like the binary, that's like not an obvious thing to especially go back on. The reverse operation, if you think of it like just a textual transformation in another format that is more binary, it should be easy to go back. But even in such a simple case, there suddenly starts something that actually is not code. Now the disassembler has to figure out, is this code, is this data? And as you all can imagine, this is all rather easy until someone tries to be funny. And I mean, as I said, in free software, this is nothing you would do anyways. So it's kind of always that people want to hide how their stuff works and make funny things to make your life harder. So this is actually not quite so trivial a task. And it may even get harder. So this is basically the same thing, but instead of like just jumping down here, there's some computation done before to calculate how far the difference between this jump and the rest of the code is. And now, even if the assembler, like in this case, you could say, okay, I see here is a jump, and I start like disassembling after this offset here down again. Now the disassembler has to figure out where to start again, and this is totally not an easy task. So there's a different thing. An additional thing that's quite popular, it's decompiling. People don't write this code usually. They write like C code or Java code or whatever. And people don't want to read even this pretty good representation when they are looking at things. They prefer to read like C code that does the same thing. There are of course more problems here. while it wasn't a simple transformation between text and binary form in the first place, compiling C to an Intel PC binary is quite a different thing, because there's no mapping at all, like at the beginning, between like the code and the binary. And single instructions in C may compile down to several of instructions on the processor and all of things. So there's no chance of ever getting back the original code when decompiling. And the idea is to get something reasonable, which is also pretty hard and also outside the scope for my project so far, obviously. So although I think this would be quite fun to do once. Yeah. So talking about it, this is basically what it looks like. And what you're seeing already, compared to object dump, we don't have like a linear flow of things, but we have a control flow graph, where here's like a jump. This is basically an if. And this is if the this is the else case, which can be noticed at the red edge here, and this is the normal case. And after the else after the if else, it like converges to the same code again. And arguably, this is already a lot easier to understand than like just a textual flow of instruction by instruction. Yeah. So exactly, Frida is the thing I started. It has lots of URLs. It's properly linked, and it's not something I've done like from scratch. I decided pretty early that LLVM would be a good basis to work on, because they have already a decent understanding of instructions as the processor reads them, and it can convert between the textual representation, some annotated representation where I can actually get parts of the instruction, like a jump, and I want to get the address or something like that. And it does a lot of architectures. You could start like with an Intel processor, probably do 10 years of work to get the instructions correct. But then there's like ARM is highly popular these days. You basically had to start all over again. And LLVM does ARM, it does Intel PCs, it does Power PC, it does whatever you basically like and whatever you can come up with. So the idea was to use LLVM and be somewhat generic there. Yeah. Then there's some need for scripting, first take and graphics toolkit. Well, this is just standard software. Exactly. So a few more words to LLVM. LLVM is pretty nice. It does all the parsing. So you give it a binary, and it finds out where the instructions start, which instructions these are. If it's a jump, and you can actually ask it, if this is this instruction a jump, and it says this is a jump, no matter if it's x86 code, it's ARM code, it's whatever code. So you can write generic code that follows jumps or calls or stuff, and calculates where these jumps point to and whatnot. So this appear to be a pretty nice thing. And it also does parsing of executables. Because program you start is not just a sequence of instructions. There's metadata around it. There's data section stuff, strings that happen in the program. And if you want to figure out these things, what the linker and the, well, what your computer basically, your operating system basically does when starting this program, and you want to get access to the same data, And LLVM can do this, and it can not only do this for the current system you're running, it can also do this for like Unix systems, for Windows systems, for OS X, Mac OS systems, and do the interesting things there. And interesting things is, of course, where to start, so where the program will start executing, because it won't execute like at the beginning normally. There's dynamic linking, where you import basically libraries. And this is also a nice thing, because for libraries you actually know where which functions are. So you can actually see some real textual things there and see like this is a print or this is a file open. And you get like the name of this thing without looking at code. So you want to have this information and sections and whatnot. So this is kind of nice. Well, so I decided to use LLVM, and it kind of was nice. But you notice this was a tool for, it's a compiler suite, which is kind of built for working with correct programs that don't do fancy things. And if the thing notices something strange, it usually has an assertion and abort. So the really high-level stuff you cannot really use when handling possibly malicious software, because like if you have a if that never is true, you could do invalid code in there. If you use the naive LLVM stuff, you get an assertion in this code path. Not that helpful, so you kind of have to restore the low-level functions. And also, the LLVM interfaces we are dealing with here, they are not internal symbols, but LLVM keeps some, does some effort on keeping the public things like consistent, and you can upgrade LLVM and things still work. This is something that is so semi-public. They tend to change things every time they do a new release. So you have to look at your code again, fix things, figure out how to do this now as compared to like last version. So it's kind of a mixed blessing, but still I think it's easier than starting from scratch here. Okay, so we are using LLVM, and I decided that the whole problem, you want to save this your progress maybe, and the whole thing is about storing facts. Like this is a function and it does connect to the server or whatever, and so you have like pieces of the binary, and they have facts attached to each other. And now the whole storage backend starts to kind of look like a database. So yeah, that's how I implemented it then. And also, like, there are tasks that are fast, but there are also things that take quite a while, like reading large functions, large binaries. So you want to have this whole thing multi-threaded and not everything running in your foreground thread. And well, Qt is already a nice toolkit for that. That's one of the things you notice if you're a C++ programmer and you start things, you're like, oh, will I have to use Boost or things? And Qt already does a good job at giving doing most of the things you want to do on the way, and signals and message passing is certainly one of these things. So scripting. So I said LLVM gave me the ability to do some abstract or like non-target specific stuff, like this is not specific to like the Intel architecture and the GCC compiler on BSD or whatever. Of course, there are quite some stuff that is heuristics based on which compiler, which operating system, whatnot. And you kind of don't want to go down and code in your C++ or C code like every heuristic you come up with and try it and have like huge functions. So I decided scripting was an important thing. And well, I decided for doing Guile scripting, which is scheme dialect. Yeah. So, where are we right now? This is we have a recursive disassembler. If you remember the slide about this "Hello World" string in between the binary, this basically means if there's a jump, the disassembler will follow the jump and continue where after the data that was jumped over. Exactly, it does handle all the like common executable formats. It handles whatever processor architecture you come up with. It will add symbols. So if the binary still has function names, it will give you the function names. If it doesn't, of course, well, it doesn't. And as people familiar with the topic may be aware of, there's a huge discussion how to print assembly instructions correctly. And there's basically Intel and AT&T syntax. This is configurably currently in a suckless way, as in you have to modify some strings in the source code and recompile. Yeah, this is currently worked on. I have a patch that will actually do configuration in like configuration file there and click in the interface and it just changes, which is certainly where people want to go. So the graphic interface is just a classical control flow graph. There are hyperlinks and there's some automatic layouting. So if you look at this, this is just this thing, and you can, like there's a jump, you can click on the jump and it will, well, find the target and highlight it for you. Might not be that useful in a small thing like this, but it's of course hugely more useful in a large program. You already see like there are some symbols that are left in a binary. This is just clutter that GCC produces, and there are up here some external functions. So this uses a printf and an R2E thing, which is also, if you look at the same thing after removing all the binaries, you still see like the imported functions. Exactly. Yeah. So this is when I told about a start function. This is what a strip binary on Unix looks like. And it has a very known structure. So you see these three addresses. These are actually functions. The first one is the init or fini. This is a last function that tears down the binary. It does nothing in this case. Then this is the first function that is called, and it does some setup. Still not what you wrote when you wrote the program. And the third address is actually the main function. So the main entry point where the normal program starts, so to say. This is, again, if construct. And you can also see like there's an unnamed function in between. This is the second one here. And What this does is it compares some strings to crypt variant, which of course you can't know. But you still see, like it's now here, also called, as I named it here check, it's also named here check, so in the call thing. And if I click on that thing, it gets me to the call function, and yeah, to the different blocks. So still, like the finding the jump target is not hugely useful for small functions. It's totally a different thing for like huge functions that do fancy stuff. Yeah. So this is as I said, this is highly regular and happens in every GCC program. So you want to have some heuristics that actually reads these sequence of instructions and figures out what the individual arguments mean, so you don't have to click manually. All right. So this is the basic user interface. There's scripting to like plug in your stuff, try things out. I started with Scheme because I like Scheme. Other people don't. There's almost ready like a IPython interface with all the IPython nice things, but yeah, needs to be finished. Of course, Scheme has a nice thing with Emacs for all the Emacs users, so you can just connect with your Emacs into this program. And have like a shell there and can develop your code, move it to the disassembler and actually do stuff. What I'm doing here is basically renaming the main function just as a demonstration. So, and as you noticed on the left side, the name of the main function has just changed when you execute the command. This is, I wouldn't want to develop script such a thing without this feature. Other people may have a different opinion on scripting here. Okay, so this is certainly not done, obviously. There are really things that need to be worked on. I told you and I showed you over here these red functions. And I said, these are nice because they are still available in script programs. And still true. But when you look at this program here, this call, it says minus 0x158. And I'm not sure this may be the R2E thing. So you really want to have here the same label as up here. Thing is, people have proven that the ELF loader is Turing complete. So this is not exactly an easy task to do. Well, it's pretty straightforward for the normal things, but you still have to do some more or less computations to get to this information. As I said, the whole thing is nice because it's independent. I can do ARM, I can do MIPS, I can do power. ARM has some really nice features. Like there are two instruction sets, thumb and the normal one. And unlike the x86, where like it's between real mode and protected mode, you don't switch in a user program. In ARM, people do this all the time. And code GCC generates at modest optimization level, does this all the time. You can basically detect the thing. because every time on an ARM, when you call or jump to an odd address, you switch the instruction type. And the processor strips like the odd thing, decrements the address by one, and starts from there with a different instruction type. Which is a really nice trick, I would say, but yeah. And things like tail calls. C compilers are incredibly smart about optimizing away function calls or returns and mixing things in a way that makes your program run faster. And at this point, if you want to figure out what it actually does, this is not that much of a help, of course. Makes this thing faster, and the idea basically is you don't need to look at the binary your compiler generates, but if you do, well, so LLVM, I also already knew when I started, there's a debugger interface, so you can like have it run these few instructions and see what it does if you want to and figure out it's safe. You actually have a C parser, because like Clang is a C compiler and it's part of LLVM. So you can actually read library headers and figure out what the arguments are, maybe find some documentation from the header, stuff like that. Argument names that are not visible in the binary. But you can find when you have like the libraries, and often the libraries are free software and you have all the source code. So you can use that. I'm still eyeing with some symbolic execution stuff to like, in the beginning I showed the example where this jump was computed by different instructions, adding, multiplying stuff. And in this case, it's still pretty trivial that it like it computed 13, I think. And while computing 13 in this way, you can basically do without running the program, you can somewhat figure out what some registers, some variables may be at this point. So I still want to do more in this direction. I call this multiplayer mode. It's like really a thing like you have a big program and you're like two people, five people looking at this thing. And it already helps if like everyone can stare at their notebook screen and one person does the clicking. So wouldn't have to cluster around some screen and hope everyone sees enough and sits comfortably. And also, like, we are doing free software. There's no problem linking in GPL code or whatever. So you can use, hopefully, use libraries to do lots of the things for all those points on the slide without starting to write your own code. Yeah. So I told you this was about a software called Flieder. This was suggested to me by someone at the university, and it's kind of started as a pun on the commercial product that is called IDA. And after a while, when I did some stuff, it kind of worked. I wanted to do a website for it. I tried to find out in the internet who uses this name actually, and. Well, of course, as a common name, it has lots of users. But even if you add software or something like that, it's still or try to find it on GitHub, you find like several projects called Flieder. So this is not like really good name. It's funny. It started like with software for a mainframe that already has this name. Some image framework. The third one basically had the same idea. It's a nice pun on this commercial software. And I actually have to apologize to him. I promised him I would free this name. And I still intend to free this name and leave it to him because he was first. And I don't like it that much either. The name. And Well, it's still on the slides and it's still on the program. Thing is, I haven't found a nice replacement yet. But check out his software. It's Frida.re. It's also pretty nice. It does some JavaScript injection into programs and smartphone apps, so you can like mess around in the memory of the program with JavaScript. Yeah. Neat idea, I think. And well, yeah. You see, this is just like a name way overused in a free software context, in a wider software context, and in the even wider context. Yeah. Exactly. So this is basically it, and I think we have still something like 10 minutes if people want to talk about things, have questions or something like that. Yep.
How big is the core development team?
That's me. Yeah. The usual team size. Yeah.
Can it do AVR disassembly?
Good question. Does LLVM do this? One would have to try.
You can compile for it, but that won't help you.
I mean, my feeling is it can in theory. You need an LLVM that is built with support for these architectures. And I'm guessing when you use the LLVM shipped with like Ubuntu or Debian, they have like MIPS and ARM and stuff included. They may not have AVR included. So you may need to build a custom LLVM version for that. Well, and the thing is, even if LLVM does not support AVR now, if they start to do that in a year, it's basically already working in this thing once they do. Yeah. Yeah.
You said you were using a non-public API of LLVM at some point. Have you talked to the LLVM if they want to make it public or something, or how?
Well, non-public, it's semi-public. It's exported. They have some documentation on it, but it's like not the thing they intend to keep stable. And kind of for a reason. I mean, you need to have some room to work in your software, and you can't promise like everything. And yes, I talk to people. I send them email. We had some discussion on the mailing list when I was working most on this, so during my university project. Some people probably still know. I should probably talk to them again. Probably once I have a name and I'm working a lot on it again. Hopefully after my master's thesis is done, I have some free time. Yeah.